Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, October 24th. I am in Nashville, Tennessee at the 2022 Annual Mortgage Banking Conference here again in Nashville. Great to be here. And so it doesn't sound quite normal because I'm not in my office. I'm in my hotel room. We're doing this. And we pulled the band together. We've got the full cast of characters all going in here. Got a lot of great information for you. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. I want to give some shout-outs today. First of all, I was at the Candor open house last night, and we recorded a podcast there. And I was sitting there with Tom Showalter, the founder of the company, along with Sarah, happened to be his daughter, is a brilliant data geek as well. And then we had also Tom Booker, and they call him Book. So it was great to sit there. We recorded a podcast we'll be sharing with you all. Lots going on at this. But then I also had a chance to sit down with several people there that just were so complimentary about the podcast and what we're doing. It's really fun to get the feedback, and so many people have stopped us in there. It's, again, 40,000 downloads each month. It's just crazy. We're so grateful for you. And so got a great show coming up here today. We're looking forward to it. I want to say also a special thank you. It's already mentioned Candor. Got to check out their technology. The vision that Tom Showalter has is nothing less than astounding. It's a mission, and I've got the best part. I don't think he'll mind saying this. I'm 72. He's got me by 2 years. He's 74. Roll the dice, put it all on the line with Candor, and they just got their product got patented, which is unusual to say the least, and they only had to make one iteration. So kudos to them. Also, Finastra, grateful to have them as a sponsor of the podcast. Check out their technology. They can set custom decisioning parameters to help streamline the approval process to keep your lending team compliant and efficient. Boy, with the litigation that's going on out there, I just saw Mitch Kider, a good friend of the podcast, good friend of mine, and saw him just as I was walking back over here, and he was just shaking his head. Also, let's say congratulations to our friends at FormFree. They do an awesome job with making sure that the account check supports the Fannie Mae positive position. And if you'd have just listened to the interview that we released October 17th last week with Brent Chandler talking about their RIKI, Residential Income Knowledge Index, check that out. That was an amazing podcast, and it's a real game changer for you. If you guys are not using a tool such as FormFree's RIKI product, Residential Income Knowledge Index, you're going to be missing out on 50 million potential new homeowners that could enter the market as a result of their tool. And then they also, that same day, the announcement came out, or the next day came out, Freddie Mac came out with an announcement about how their residual income approach. So it's just so much great data what they're doing, and they're at the epicenter. I'd say the two companies that are at the epicenter of what's happening right now as it relates to this aspect of the business is both FormFree as well as our friends at Candor. We also have Ledger Toolkit, so grateful to have them. Listen to the interview we did on July 11th, as well as Total Expert. I just talked to Joe Weilu down in his suite, and I'm very excited. They have their open house tonight. I'll be at that. And what they're doing in the Total Expert platform, it also works on servicing retention. I know if interest rates are going up, we need to worry about servicing retention. Well, Mark will tell you there is a good chance that interest rates, when we start having the economic conditions we have, interest rates are going to fall. And Total Expert has so many things. It's a CRM they can use for recruiting. It's a CRM for running your origination business. It's a CRM also for the servicing retention, MSR retention. So listen to the podcast we did with Dan Catinelli. It was very good, and October 21st last week. Also, Simple Nexus. I got to tell you, I was just with Ben Miller in their booth talking to him, and then I got introduced to the co-founder of Encino, who bought them and listened to their vision. I got to tell you, we're so fortunate to have the sponsors, the forward-thinking sponsors that on our podcast, the leading fintech companies in the industry. So grateful to them. Of course, the other sponsors that we just grateful for, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One. Then we have, by the way, Lenders One just cut a deal. Did you see the news that they are now, you're able to, if you're a Lenders One member, you have you can originate loans through Walmart. That's a pretty cool announcement. They talking to Tricia Migliazzo at the Empower event, and she just talked about that announcement. And, of course, we love Mortgage Collab because David Kittle's on here. We love both of these co-ops. You should remember, we got the co-op, we got their party coming up. I think it's tonight. I have to get that straightened out, but you can fill it on. As well as Success Kit, as well as Knowledge Coop, as well as Mobility, MMI, and Modex, and Mortgage Advisory Tools, as well as DW Consulting. We're so grateful for all of our sponsors. It's great to have them here. So the previous, this last week, I want to run over real quickly, and then we'll get on to the podcast content. Last week, we had Kevin Perino talking on October 19th about how to make the world of lending a better place through education videos. It was a great catch up with Kevin that we released that. Then also, I already mentioned, we had Dan Cantinelli, a total expert, driving deal flow during this tight market. Very interesting podcast. As well as we had on October 22nd, we had Garrett Locklear of Candid with us and the Next Generation Mortgage Platform. Great stuff. Upcoming this week, we have Jen Dupuis. I tried to make it so Frenchy, and it's Jen Dupuis. Anyway, she's on there with Kinetic Spark Consulting. We talked about, the topic was Imperial Leadership. And it's really a great podcast. Jen's energy and knowledge is over the top. Also, we're releasing a podcast that's near and dear to everyone, Pat Sherlock of QFS Sales Consulting, and Scott Johnson of Homebridge. We'll be releasing that this week on October 28th. So, and it's Scott and Pat are talking about hiring and developing rookies. Good one. Great topic, and it's an important one, especially in today. I want to say a special thank you to our regulars, Adam DeSantis, Les Parker, Matt Graham, David Kittle, Alice Alvey, and Mark Helm, my co-hosts. Without further ado, let's get over to Adam DeSantis and today's Mortgage Minute, sponsored by the MBA.
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association, coming to you live from MBA's annual convention in Nashville, Tennessee. If you're here, I hope you have a great time. Here's what you need to know. Last Friday, Ginnie Mae announced it would extend the mandatory implementation date of its recently announced risk-based capital requirement to December 31st, 2024. Ginnie Mae has been engaged with industry stakeholders on this issue and stated that the delayed compliance date is a result of stakeholder feedback and current market conditions. While the delayed implementation date allows more time for compliance, it does not remedy concerns regarding the punitive treatment of mortgage servicing rights, which could reduce risk-adjusted returns and contribute to a potential retreat of IMBs from Ginnie Mae's servicing while increasing borrower costs and reducing access for FHA, VA, and USDA borrowers. MBA will continue ongoing discussions with Ginnie Mae, as we have since August, to advocate for refinements to the RBC requirement to ensure they do not disrupt the MSR market and destabilize the IMB sector. Also last week, a federal appeals court found that the CFPB's independent funding structure is unconstitutional. Because the case involved the CFPB's payday lending rule, there is no immediate or short-term impacts to any mortgage rules from this decision. MBA is currently evaluating the potential impact on existing Bureau regulations, and we will also continue to monitor legal and market implications to inform members of any new developments as they arise. Now that's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Good job, Adam. It was great seeing Adam. Thank you. What a great guy. I was at the Empower event on Saturday. He had a table set up for me. We interviewed a lot of the women attendees at the wonderful, amazing Empower event. Just another, just really inspirational event. Al's talked about this a few weeks back. And so appreciate Adam DeSantis. Check out all of the podcasts, that all of the information by going to MBA or MBA's News Link as well. Let's get over to Les Parker with today's TM Spotlight and a macro view of the markets. Les, what you got?
PM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Big Bang, who knows the whole plan? Flashing on red at MBS Live. Matt, where are the investors for mortgages above par so homebuyers can reduce their upfront cash? Dried up, scared to lose the premium when rates drop and borrowers refinance. Who wants to move from their home with a loan under 3% to a new home with a 60% higher payment? With few sellers and few buyers, no wonder builders lack confidence in the near term. The Fed is committed to fighting inflation, but not to the extent the market thought. Ask the dollar and gold. The Fed does not want the music to stop, but icebergs are ahead that they made. Slowing and freezing, no splishing and splashing, no chair. These views are my own. Break the ice at tmspotlight.com.
Good music. I walked through the Nashville Music Hall of Fame and Museum. It was really some great music, brought back so many memories of good stuff. Now, normally we'd run over to Matt Graham, but we got David Kittle on the line, and he's like BMOC, a big man on campus, you know, past president, chairman of the MBA, and he's here. So, Mr. Kittle, we're going to run over to you, and then we're going to get to Matt, because I know you got to run off to Mr. Whatever, got to meet with the president or whatever. But it's good to have you here, David, and appreciate you.
Good morning. That's a little much, but thanks for that. Listen.
From a mentor near you.
No, I finally found a quiet place to talk to you, Dave.
I got one
good announcement for everybody, and sorry that I have to run quickly, but Sandra Thompson, the director of FHFA, announced this morning that Vantage Score is approved, and Vantage Score and FICO will be required on all the loans going to the GSEs. The last couple of directors at FHFA have kicked this can down the road, and, boy, she stood up, made the decision. The great news about this is, look, Baird Burns, who retired just in the last year, has worked on this for years to get it approved.
Tirelessly.
And what this does for all the lenders on here, it opens up the door to thousands of homeowners who probably wouldn't have qualified before because of an antiquated credit scoring system. And so this is a big, big win for the industry today.
Yes, it is. That's good. Sandra, I mean, I just like her so much. She's just, you know, well, I'm not a fan of the Biden administration, generally speaking. I tell you, they got a good one with her. She's good.
Yeah, listen, she gets it. She made the decision, and it was the right one, and it's the right one for the industry, and it's the right one for the consumer. So kudos to her, and there's nothing else I could say that could top that so far. It's been a great conference so far. You know, it was just starting yesterday, and it's well attended, and the meetings are going. Everybody's in a good mood. A lot of people people are hiring and people are looking to get hired. So it's going to be a great conference here.
Yep. Good. David, thanks so much for taking time to dial in. We'll get you let you get released out to the rest of the world, but appreciate you dialed in and give us a report and your perspective from the conference. It's well attended.
Talk to you soon. Take care.
Appreciate it, sir. You bet. Matt Graham's here, founder and CEO of MBS Live. Just a fabulous facility he has, or the platform he has, mbslive.net. And Matt's here with the market update. Man, really interested to hear what you had to say, friend. What do you have to say?
Yeah, how's it going, Dave? Well, I got to answer Les's question, too.
I'm interested
in
what you had to say, and I'm interested in what you're going to say. Past, present, future.
Yeah, so.
You just sent out a note. I just got a note.
Yeah, you know, I got to work while I'm doing this. You know, I got that team of sweatshop workers that pretends to be me on MBS Live, always working in the background. Interesting time.
What's going on?
I will get to Les's questions here in a second, too. But interesting times last week because we had quite a bit of volatility and not a lot of it made a ton of sense to people, even people that were paying a lot of attention. Let's dig into it real quick. So we started the week holding inside the recent trading range, which was, you know, near the highest rates in decades. But we were not drifting any higher at first. National Association of Home Builders, builder confidence came out at 38 versus a previous reading of 46. So that is quite a drop. And it was actually the biggest month-over-month drop on record, I believe, or the biggest year-over-year drop. I don't remember what I wrote, but it was big. Let's put it that way. The six-month outlook was even lower than the headline, and that is not really common. That's something that's only been happening post-COVID, and it continues to happen now. And, for reasons less outlined, inventory is tight, and people are wanting to sit on their low rates and not necessarily move up to a new home. So demand and traffic are down, rates are high, same old story, but it's definitely hitting builders. Starts and permits, housing starts, building permits, still low, but not in a panicked way. And then on Thursday, we had another low reading in jobless claims. And although the Philly Fed Index, which is a reasonably important report, came in lower than expected, the components inside that index that measure inflation and employment were higher. And if that speaks to upcoming reports about inflation or next week's jobs report, that is negative for the market or for the bond market and stocks for that matter, because both stocks and bonds are doing their best to sort of think about what economic data means for Fed policy, since the Fed is the rising tide that lifts all boats or the falling tide that sinks all boats. You can oftentimes see stock prices and bond yields move in a sort of mirror image of one another when they are trading the prospects for Fed accommodation. Existing home sales in line with expectations, but still much lower than they had been. And then things got interesting on Friday. So rates had already started drifting up on Thursday. In the overnight session on Friday, it's almost a certainty that Japan was dumping U.S. treasuries aggressively. Now, I will note, I've seen some people in the financial Twittosphere mention that Japan would be using the Fed's reverse repurchase agreement window facility. But there are quite a few other people that just say, no, they're just selling treasuries. And there is some suggestion that that was happening so that they could shore up falling Japanese currency, falling yen prices versus the dollar. And sure enough, there was an epic surge back towards stronger levels in yen, but not before treasuries had sort of been routed. And I think we also saw some, I hate the term bond vigilantes, right? I hate it. But to some extent, I think we saw some of that forcing of the Fed's hand in the long end with, bond traders really saying, okay, Fed, you're going to keep talking about hikes and hikes and hikes regardless of what's happening right now in the economy. You want to see, less inflation and lower growth and all the rest of it. So what if we do this to the long end of the yield curve? What if we just sell bonds and never buy them? And I do think that there was some element of that among the trading community. Why buy bonds until something happens or the Fed says something to really put a ceiling over rates? And the first cracks in that were seen with the Wall Street Journal article and just basically suggesting that the Fed could be close to discussing a pivot, for lack of a longer explanation. And I think that was a good assessment, because that's really what we're waiting to hear from the Fed. We knew we had several Fed speakers on tap on Friday, and we knew that would be the last day that we could hear from them before the next Fed announcement, because they're in their blackout period now. So even I had said the previous day, hey, maybe we could get the Fed to throw us some kind of bone heading into the blackout period, and it could serve to sort of mitigate some volatility in the market. So the Wall Street Journal article kicked that off in a big way, and people started buying bonds. And then the Fed's Mary Daly came out and said, it's time to discuss leveling off the rate hike trajectory. Those weren't her exact words, but that's effectively what she said. It was the most dovish comment from any Fed speaker we've had since this rising rate cycle had begun. Not a shockingly huge reaction in markets, but a pretty decent reaction. Bonds actually got back to territory after 10-year yields had gone as high as 4.338, which is very high for a 10-year yield, a lot higher than most anyone thought they would go this year. Now heading into the new week, things are flat but volatile overall. We have a couple important economic reports, not necessarily from a market movement standpoint, but the home price reports coming out tomorrow. Of those, we have FHFA, which will round out the second of 3 months of price movement that will determine what conforming loan limits will be next year. And some of the lenders that have moved up to 715K had already dialed back to 710, and for good reason, and I think we'll probably see what those reasons look like in tomorrow's data, and we'll get a better idea of where that quarterly expanded data could be coming in. Treasury auction cycle, twos, fives, and tens. New home sales on Wednesday expected to drop precipitously from last month's shockingly high number, likely pulled higher by builders sort of doing a little bit of a fire sale dance. And then we have the ECB, European Central Bank, announcement Thursday morning. They're not seen it as being at really high risk of surprising the market, but you never know when a central bank is talking. Jobless claims, as always, durable goods, not much of a market mover. GDP, I don't like GDP as a market mover, yeah, but if I was going to make an exception for it, it would be for this advance reading, which is the first look we get at Q3, and that can indeed have an impact. It's expected to come in at 2.4, positive 2.4 versus negative 0.6. Last but not least, core PCE, or just PCE, and that is the Fed's preferred inflation index other than or in lieu of CPI. CPI is a market mover, though, because CPI comes out 2 weeks before PCE. Nonetheless, if it is much higher or lower than expected, we should always leave some room for that to move the market. So, yeah, last but not least, Les's questions. What did Les say again? Why is it so hard for to get mortgages above par? So I think we could talk about that for a long time, but that liquidity issue is starting to thaw in some cases. I saw some rates up around 8% last week that had a good amount of rebate in them, and other rates in the mid sevens that had a good amount of rebate or premium pricing, if you will. But that is few and far between right now. It's slowly starting to thaw, but that thaw is coming the more that we spend time at these rates, and the more stably we can do that, the better it will be. So lenders don't just want some reassurance that we're not going back down in rate, but they also would like rates to stay fairly flat so they know which coupons need to be the most liquid. I will say this, though, Dave, even though the Fed keeps talking about rates rising really quickly or staying high for a long time, you just can't help but be wary about the prospect for rates falling enough that these currently higher rates are at risk of prepaying quickly. And so it makes premium pricing an ongoing challenge, in my opinion. If it were my money, you know, I would worry that
why would you pay,
you know, growth or inflation would do what it's going to do in 2023, and then rates were going to fall enough for a bunch of refis. So it's not going to be an easy or quick process to get premium in those high coupons.
That is so true and understandable. Everyone's frustrated. Can't get a par price. I heard a lot of people screaming about that. And no premium, no par. I think there's some good news in that. You know, if you want to look at a silver lining thing, the fact that that is an anticipation rates are going to be going down, this is not a permanent, this is a temporary. So
totally.
If there's any good news in this, that's safe. Even those that are pricing Jenny Mae's, even those pricing any of these securities right now, they're of the opinion rates are got to come down. Good news, good report.
And even if it's not necessarily due to bond markets, it could be due to MBS spreads tightening up because they're fairly blown out right now. So
really blown out. I think at the highest levels, I think when what Frattantoni was saying, Mike Frattantoni at the economic update, is the highest levels ever. Is that accurate?
I mean, no. MBS versus 10-year treasuries, mortgage rates versus treasuries, maybe. Yeah, there's a case for that. MBS versus like a 5 and 10-year treasury blend, which is what a lot of people use, worked the highest since at least 2011, but probably since, you know, 2008.
Yeah.
So, and that was bad. I mean, you don't really want to have to go back and compare to 2008 when you're talking about MBS spreads, because there shouldn't ever be anything worse than that.
Yeah, that was the worst. Yeah. Yep. So good report on that. And then, Matt, we were talking just before we went live about the GDP growth, what the my friend Tony, I've got an economic forecast. I thought I'd throw this out to everybody at this point. Be good. Mark, love to help get you can get in on this, especially so when it comes to some of this. Well, in fact, Mark, do you want to comment on the servicing? That's your absolutely your area of expertise, deepest expertise. Got a lot of expertise, but that's one of the ones that's probably the deepest. Any thoughts on why we're not seeing a par or premium pricing?
Well, I think the summary of the events we've had have kind of led to that. I don't expect anything to change on that, but I think the bottom line is the people that are the buyers are squeezing everywhere they can to make their ends meet, and anybody that's selling loans into that market is going to be a victim of that market right now. I think it's real clear what the problems are. And so everybody's trying to cut as much as they can, and that's going to continue for a while.
Yeah, I ran into Austin Tillman and David Stevens, the other David Stevens, and he reversed himself at the conference at the exhibit hall at the entrance where I was going in this morning, and we had a chance to talk. And I told them that you're a co-host with me now, and they just have to hold you in such high regard as well. But those couple of guys that talk about hedging this and where should we be at, we got to get them on the podcast here, Mark, and really do another series, a deeper dive into servicing, because they add an element certainly to that, been specializing in that for a long time. But thanks so much. Let's run through some of the other data that we got from that while we have Matt on the phone. Get some commentary. Let's start with GDP growth. It was 5.17. That's locked in for 2021. The MBA says it'll be a negative 0.2% in 2022 is how it's going to settle out. And then 2023, an optimistic 0.1% for GDP. Ow! And then not until 2024 does it climb up to 1.7. Again, 2023, 0.1. That's meager. And then 0.17 in 2024, 1.7 in 2024, 1.8 in 2025. I had a little dyslexia going on there. Anyway, that is not... it's just interesting to see where things are at. Then they have inflation at, of course, 2021, it was 6.7. 2022, we saw 7.5. It's going to drop in 2023 to 2.6, which implies that we could see interest rates coming down, as well as 2024, 2.3% inflation number, and down to 2.2 in 2025. Interesting number. Then unemployment is at 5.4 in 2021 this year. It is at 3.7, is where it's going to settle in as an overall average, 4.9 up next year, 2023. This is discouraging. 2024 is 5%. Now, that's kind of looking where we were at 2021. So, not a horrible number, but still. And then dropping back down in 2025 at 4.3%. You know, picking unemployment numbers, that's an art in and of itself. The Federal Reserve Funds is 0.125 in the Federal Reserve. We just matched this report, the high here, 4.375. And we're going to see that again next year is what they're predicting. So no change in the Fed funds rate. And dropping down to 1.25 2024 and 2.375 in 2025. The 10-year Treasury, 1.5 in 2021. 2022 is 3.9, dropping in 2023 down to 3.0. 2024 dropping down to 2.5 and staying there through 2025. Okay, and then the 30-year mortgage, this I thought was really interesting. Of course, we knew it was low in 2021, 3.1, going up to 6.7, 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. This year is what's going to be the high watermark, then dropping back down in 2023 to 5.4, still high, 2024 not falling down to 4.5 and staying the same, leveling off there for 24 and 25. So, Matt, any thoughts as you hear me read these numbers? With my dyslexic brain
no,
here,
all I hear numbers. Is numbers. I don't even remember what they all meant. I mean, it all seems pretty reasonable. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of yeah buts and it depends on really how persistent inflation is. But I think, you know, it if you sort of buy into the baseline, it all sounds pretty good to me. Yeah. And 5% unemployment isn't necessarily the end of the world, especially if it ushers in significantly lower rates.
Yeah, that would be true. Yeah, especially when we have 5.4 in 2021.
Yeah, Matt, this
is
Mark. I got a question. I got a question for you, if I could ask it.
Anytime
we look at the economy and things going on, we always talk about unemployment rate, okay? And David travels a lot. I travel a lot. And I'm seeing this phenomena right now everywhere I go. And I'm only focusing on one element of our economy. I'm focusing on the restaurants. I've been to four different restaurants in the past 3 days. Some of them had abnormal waits. Some of these are major chains. You go inside, they got plenty of tables. They can't hire anybody. So what happened to all these people that left the workforce and they haven't come back in the workforce? How is it that McDonald's can't open up during the day because they don't have enough staff for inside service? How can a PF chain have a 30-minute wait when they got 20 tables inside because they don't have enough people to wait the tables? What is if these numbers are rolling into national numbers, the numbers are being presented are BS, because I'm seeing something all over the country, not just in the South, but all over the country in food services industry about being able to hire people. So what happened to those folks? They worked one time. Where are they today?
Not really, because I'm not like a labor market economist, but a generic thought would be, just from my own personal observation, is that the restaurant and hospitality industries in general got just turned on their ear from COVID and decimated in a way that they might not recover from for a while. And I don't really know, you know, what sort of shockwaves are still reverberating there, but I am not sure if the restaurant industry would be my favorite sample for what's going on in the labor market. As for people that have left the workforce and aren't coming back, too big of a topic for me to offer anything conclusive on, but those reports are broken down in an excruciating level of detail if you want to wade through pages and pages of PDF. And it's sometimes enlightening to see where the ebbs and flows are, because when you look at those line items, you might see, oh, this sector had how many people come into it? And it's one of the reasons that labor economists like to look at payrolls as opposed to unemployment rate and the household survey, because they can actually see where the hiring and the separations are occurring. And
I'm seeing it transitioning some, Matt, because, you know, the restaurant thing is really kind of funny, because I watch people leaving and not staying because of the wait. So they might have got hit by COVID, but now they're losing business because they can't serve people in a timely manner. And I'm seeing this in the service industry across the board. The UPS store I use can't hire people. The Firestone place that fixes your tires on your car and tunes your car up and all that, they're about 50% staffed in one location that I go to. So it just seems like everywhere I'm touching somebody in any kind of service-related industry, everybody's just sucking wind on trying to hire people. It just I'm just wondering what happened to all those people that used to be in the workforce. That's what's amazing me. I don't get it. I don't get it. Unless they're all home living with mama and not working. Then I don't know.
Well, I'll try to put together some numbers for next week on that, because it's definitely a question I hear a lot.
Yeah, it's minimum wage, I think, is a factor, Mark. When you can, I mean, I look at what people can get paid on unemployment versus what they can work getting going back to work and working at a McDonald's. I mean, I understand the minimum wage argument in one sense, but how can anyone work at the minimum wage with inflation as it is, the cost of living as it is? I mean, I think if you're going to – in the service industry, you got to step up, and that means we're paying more in the
well,
process.
You know,
I think
I agree with you, David, but when you go to a Chick-fil-A and they got a sign that says their starting wage is $15 an hour, that's not minimum wage.
There you
and,
go. Yeah,
and then
you know,
all these places
there's,
have sign-up bonuses for people trying to hire people, and the people just are not coming out of the woodwork to take a job. It's just – I don't know if it's just a phenomenon we got going on right now, but it scares the hell out of me, because I think it gives us a kind of a root of something bigger out there happening that we don't have our hand around, you know?
Well, I was going to tease you, Mark. It scares the hell out of you because you can't be eating at McDonald's anymore. I mean, God forbid you have to have Sally fixing meals at home.
I'll get off the soapbox now.
I'm giving you a bad time. I love it. Matt Graham, great job. Love having you here on the podcast. I did get a lot of feedback when I was walking through. People love your commentary. They love the contrast in your personality for mine. And they just, I love it when you harass them. But we really feel sorry because we like him a lot, and they love your service. So got to check it out. What if you do not, have you have not signed up for Matt Graham's mbslive.net, .net it. And have done so, be sure to do so. You can sign up with the LOL code and the sign up with code. It'll give you an extended period of time without a credit card. So good job. Appreciate you extending that out to our people, Matt. Many, many, many of them have come to be loyal customers of yours as a result of listening to the podcast. And it's so affordable. Shh, don't tell anybody that. You could actually raise your prices, but
it's going to happen.
Especially in these times. But it is so affordable, so affordable for the information you provide. Good job. Matt Graham, appreciate you. Have a great rest of the week. Keep an eye on it. I have you open and constantly in my pocket, and I'm watching your updates continuously. Talk to you soon. Matt, blessings. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, we would have normally gone to Kittle. We've already had the Kittle report from the NBA. Appreciate him so much. Another person I just love so much is Alice Alvey. Alice, it's so good to have you here. We're missing you here this year at the conference. But there are a lot of people. What's really interesting, Alice, is how many people registered for the conference and then didn't show. And because there's a whole lot of hotel rooms that became available. And I had a horrible experience. I think I told you about it the other day. But I had a horrible experience because Margaritaville, which is a part of the Wyndham, they have the Wyndham timeshares connected. When I booked the room through Margaritaville, which is right across the street from the convention center, I got a call last Wednesday that says, I'm sorry we could not get a hold of the owner of your unit you're renting, and so we're having to cancel your reservation. And they sent me out, and I'm going like, how can you do this? This is just not right. So be careful when you're making reservations at busy events like this, and you a call and you think you're getting a hotel, just make sure that there's no timeshare component, that you're not stuck over there with them. And that's what happened to me. So fortunately, my Hilton folks came through. Hilton Garden Inn is where I'm at, and great place. But it's cost me a lot more money. But Alice, we're not here to talk about hotel frustrations. We're here to get an update on what's going on legislatively and what's happening.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry about your hotel episode there, but yeah, I am back in Cleveland, and we are crazy busy over here. So I wanted to give folks a couple of updates on things that you've heard mentioned in the show. So first of all, thank you, David Kittle, for a shout out on the Vantage Score. We have talked about that in previous programs, David, and maybe we need to resurface that for our listeners so that they can get refreshed on that background. So the Vantage Score main difference is that it wasn't created by two individuals. Yes, both are publicly traded, but the Vantage Score is the brainchild of Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion together to come up with different tweaks to the scoring model, which essentially means that there are more borrowers who can get a score. So there's two main components. You only need one trade line and you don't need any seasoning on that trade line, whereas for FICO, you do need some seasoning on that trade line, and so that lets more people in. And then also the range for the Vantage Score within there, the same 300 to 850, but within the range are different classifications for what's considered good, very good, and excellent credit. So the key is, it's wonderful that FIFA's announced this. Now we've got to get where it's an option within DU and LP. So it's a great announcement. I'm super interested in the follow-up and what are we going to hear in terms of what the timeline looks like to actually be able to have this to be a benefit for customers in our live application. So more to follow on that for everybody. Just wanted to throw in those couple of follow-up notes. We'll have to dig up our previous Vantage Score sessions where we've got interviews with the owners there. Mentioned by MBA was about the change for Ginnie Mae that they're going to extend their mandatory implementation dates of the risk-based capital requirements. So the impact is to the IMBs, and the main change is adding the 25 basis points for lenders under the total GSE single family outstanding servicing portfolio, plus a couple of bumps in the liquid asset requirements. You know, so we're really just kind of, we're working with a couple of tweaks in there that really are going to change things for an independent mortgage banker on the minimum net worth. And of course, that's coming on the heels of a big downturn in volume. And so that's why when MBA says, you know, that this could have an impact to credit availability for consumers, they are absolutely correct, as it could change the number of lenders out there that are eligible or want to get into Ginnie Mae servicing. So that being postponed a year is just kicking a can down the road, as we've already said on the show, happens quite frequently. And we'll be waiting to see if there can be any changes in the meantime. But that request for information was all the way back in July of 2021. Ginnie Mae seems pretty set on moving forward with that. So no big, you know, I don't expect a change, but we'll see what happens. We had our proposed rule out there from USDA about lenders being able to pick up direct endorsement authority. All total, about 40 comments were submitted. I haven't had a chance to go through all of them yet, but I'll let folks know if I see anything big in there. I was surprised in just the, you know, 10 or 15 or so I've been able to go through so far. There's a few people from operations who chimed in and said, wait a minute, I already have shipping problems. I don't want to have this approved. Or, wait a minute, we already have underwriting. The underwriting's hard. I don't want to have this approved. So it was interesting, some of the voices with just a few sentences who commented, and I'm hoping that there's a lot bigger voices out there who commented. I do see some good bank and credit union responses who did thorough responses on being in favor of lenders having direct endorsement authority like they do with FHA. So we'll see what happens out of that, but comment period is closed, and they'll just sift through the comments. Hopefully they can get through those 40 quickly and let us know what's next. So that's it, Dave.
Good. Good job. Good job, Alice. Appreciate it very much. Mark, any comments you want to add to that? Matt, Mark?
No, very good report. Thank you, Alice.
Thanks, Mark.
Matt or Mark?
I'm good. I can enhance or add anything for Alice.
Alice's stuff is, some research she does on this for this report, which we so appreciate, Alice, your research, and you're always checking all the blogs and looking at everything that's happening, and you do a great job, and so many of our listeners appreciate it, and I appreciate it. Thank you, hello, Sally. Appreciate it. For the,
you're welcome.
Stay up, say hi to Bill. Mr. Cosgrove, say hi to him, and what a leader in the industry he has been. We miss him being here active. Let's, Alan Pollack was trying to dial in, but his flight must have gotten delayed. He says to say hello to everybody. We do value Alan's report, but unfortunately we are unable to do so. So Mark Helm, come on in, give us a report on servicing, and I've got room service showing up here wanting to clean my room, so I'm going to mute out, but you get the service report.
Okie dokie. I'm going to give you a kind of sum up a few things here that I think would be good things to close us out with today. First thing I'd like to mention to everyone, it is kind of my monitor of what's happening with our industry and the MBA environment and meetings. For decades now, I've always taken the most final MBA registration list ahead and gone through and compared the number of vendors against the number of mortgage bankers. And that number stays at a pretty constant percentage for the most part, but I found that this meeting, the number of vendors went up quite a few percentage points. So that kind of tells you that the lenders aren't spending the money to come to the convention, and that's probably why a lot of them canceled out. No big surprise on that with all the cutbacks all the lenders are doing and all, but it's a little phenomena that you might enjoy doing sometimes. If you're bored and want to look through a couple thousand names, do it like I did it one day on a plane, and I looked at it, and it's an enlightening experience comparing the number of vendor attendees, potential attendees, to the mortgage banking entity folks that are there. I'm going to use my part of the segment today on education on two items, and actually on both of these items, I'm going to engage Alice a little later on, and so we can put something together for our newsletter, which I think would be helpful for people, because as always, when regulations and things come out, there's always a reading between the line and they're not as clear as they should be, and I want to get down to the meat on a couple of things. So I'm going to talk to you on two things real quick. The one thing is a UEI number. For those of you who do not know what a UEI number, it's a unique entity identifier number. This is a number that is now used by the federal government on SAMS.com to replace the DUNS membership that was required to do business with the federal government. And that happened back in April, and they rolled that out. Well, and as they rolled it out, a bunch of companies went in business to help you get that number, because what happens with anything, it's a little bit of a complicated process, and there's so many people don't want to really understand it. They want to get it, so there's people that do that. But what happened on August the 23rd, HUD issued a mortgagee letter that said, guess what? Not only is this UEI number come out, we're now going to require that to be on your application to apply for a HUD. And guess what? You lenders that are a HUD approved, you're now going to have a UEI number assigned to you, and you're going to have to renew your information on that UEI number every year. So those are two things that are out there. Now, I'm trying to get the clarification on those last two things ahead. I know for a fact you're going to get assigned a number if you're approved HUD lender, but I don't know. The way I read it, you're going to have to handle a renewal on it too. And certainly if you're someone out there that is not in an environment where you have FHA approval and you're thinking about it, or you need to be thinking about working on that UEI number, because I've got one client held up on an approval process because their application went in about the same time the mortgagee letter went out, and they held their application up because of the mortgagee letter. And it's address verification and some other things, and it can take a few weeks to get that number before you can put it in on your application. So that's something I want people to be educated on, and we'll put something out on that. The second thing I want to talk about is it kind of slipped in and nobody paid much attention to it. Back in August or so, Ginnie Mae kind of put out some information that they're changing the capital requirements for the Ginnie Mae issuers and servicers of mortgage loan. And it's one of those things where you got to start reading between the lines, and I don't like that. So I've written up something that I'm going to get some clarification on from Ginnie Mae and hopefully publish that so there's a better understanding. It looks like it could possibly be a detriment for smaller lenders to retain Ginnie Mae servicing. Won't be a problem for banks, but it could be a big problem for smaller lenders that help lenders that have Ginnie Mae approvals in retaining the servicing. So I just want to make everybody aware that's out there, and we'll put some information out on the newsletter to get you better educated as I become better educated on those two issues, to make sure that we don't stumble over some things, and we're well prepared for the future as we move on trying to do our work in mortgage banking on a day-to-day basis. And, David, that's my little educational updates, and things will come out on the
good
newsletter
stuff.
On that.
Well, good. And, Alice, any thoughts, anything you want to add into on that?
I just think it's a great idea to be able to help folks with what's in the weeds on how they're doing the liquidity calculations and the changes into that base net worth requirement. It does, as you said, Mark, get very complicated, and it's great that you're going to put out an education piece so people can make sure that they get it right, because we do want lenders to get into this space. It's very cool.
I'm going to make sure Alice reviews it so I do it right.
Oh. I'm not a CPA,
really,
but
you're good about educating the people on the podcast, and I want to put something out. I want to put it out as right as can be, and, you know, dealing with regulations that come out, there's always a lot of gray area, so we'll do the best we can, but I do definitely want you to work with me on that.
Happy to.
Very good. Very, very good. Well, Alan is not in here, dialed in this week. So that is going to wrap up our podcast. I'm going to get back in. And, Mark, I know you're on your way here, so looking forward to seeing you here. And wish you all a wonderful rest of your week. This could be an interesting day, interesting week in the markets. Let's see what happens. Looking at some of the fundamentals that are out there, it's, my gosh, pretty crazy. But I tell you this, folks, one of the things that came out through the economic data, there's so much here that I'm looking at. And by the way, I'll be on with Dave Savage this afternoon at 2:30 Pacific time, 4:30 Central time. We're going to go through some of the economic data I'm going to be giving up. But the most important thing that we've got to keep everyone aware of is look at the demographics. Look at the amount of the number of millennials and Gen Zers that are delayed getting into the home market. And they're going to be here in a big, big way. That is something you have to keep in context with all the negativity that is going on out there. Hey, folks, I wish you hope you have a wonderful weekend, a week and a weekend ahead. We'll look forward to having you back here. Remember, we have coming up on this week on our podcast, we've got Jen DePolis coming on with Imperial Lender Leadership, really a great interview, as well as October 28th. That's on the 26th, on the 28th. We got Pat Sherlock who is just recognized as such a top, along with Scott Johnson, by the way, of Homebridge. And we're talking about hiring and developing rookies, a really good podcast that we recorded last week. We'll be sharing with you on this week. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to having you here. And a special thank you again to our sponsors, and who are Candor Finastra, Form Free Lender Toolkit, Total Expert, Simple Nexus, Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, Mortgage Collaborative, Success Kit, Knowledge Coop, Mobility MMI, Modic, Mortgage Advisory Tools, and DW Consulting. Have a great week, everybody, and look forward to seeing you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.